other than use up my time, here's a May 25th, 2018 memo that sets out our concerns. And basically,
you're not being charged to answer my question. I'm actually interested in hearing from you, and it won't be charged to your time because the clerk has stopped the clock. What are the costs that you want us to be aware of?
Well, specifically, we want to look at first of the options to this. We want to know that the city has considered options to changing the identity. I mean, this is more than just an address change. This is, you're changing Southwest to South. You're changing an area's identity. And so we want to know that the city has considered the costs to businesses and individuals to making these changes. There's a lot of hidden costs. There's too many costs for me to know right now off the top of my head, but we want to know that the city has considered those. And Andrew has done a good job of identifying a problem, but he hasn't really got into the details. I mean, have they considered the alternatives? Are there alternatives in regard to procedural alternatives? For example, using cross streets rather than an address. What options have been considered rather than a wholesale change to the identity of a large group of people? And so what we're asking for here is that, in the meeting we had with Andrew, the deputy fire chief was supposed to come to that meeting and explain to us what the costs were. He unfortunately had a fire. He couldn't do that because of the fire. We never got a chance to hear from him. We're asking that the city delay this decision for a period of 6 months until we've had an opportunity to be heard and know that this is the right option for the city of Portland. Thank you for considering my
Thanks
testimony.
Thanks for being here. We appreciate it. So good afternoon. Sorry, Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. One suggestion I have. I was here on the council when we changed the name of 39th Avenue to Cesar Chavez Boulevard, and one of the concerns, specifically the business associations, was regarding the signs, the signage for the businesses. And so I know that we've been increasing funding for Venture Portland, and one thing that you might explore, because it seems to me that's one of the main things, the sign's not going to expire, whereas letterhead and various other paper goods are going to have 7 years to be replaced. That is just a suggestion to look to Venture Portland to see if there might be some small grants to help small businesses to help with changing the signs.
Thank you.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Paul Cohn. I work for the City of Portland. I'm a GIS analyst. I work for the Bureau of Technology Services. For about a dozen years now, I maintain the database of the streets for the city. I also work closely with Bureau of Emerging Communications as well as Bureau of Development Services, the addressing team there, to make sure that addresses, as they're created, changed, line up with BOEX systems. And so I worked with Andrew and some with Don, I guess sort of as a technical resource for this project. One of the things, there was a reference to the phone system, I think it was slide 14. I actually took that photo when I was tasked with going out and working to generate a map for that new Vesta phone system that came online in November, I believe it was. That actually system was, Larry Platt was talking about systems that we single source. The single source for that system was State of Oregon Office of Emergency Management. Every PSAP 911 center in the state has that same system now. So we were charged with implementing that last year. One of my first questions to the vendor was, how are you going to make the leading zero addresses map? And it took them a while to answer that. It took them a long while to answer that. I probably spent off and on over several months working with them, about 80 hours of my time, just to make sure that the leading zero addresses will plot correctly on the call taker's map. And that was for 950 or so wireline addresses that are down in South Portland. So 2 weeks of my work just for under 1,000 addresses to make sure they map correctly. So I can't speak for all the bureaus and all the systems that will be impacted by this and all the finances that, the money that could be involved to sort of unwind the leading zero problem that we've had for ever since computers came along and before that. But certainly in my work, it's something that we have to figure out every day. We have to make sure that those things work correctly. And so I was just, my work is an example of that. So thank you.
So that's very good feedback. And I want to make sure that if this goes forward, you are integrated into this process. So are you at the table?
I've been working with Andrew quite a bit, sort of providing a technical resource and also to BDS as well.
Good. And as you know, I appreciate your expertise, and I particularly appreciate the work you've been doing with the Bureau of Emergency Communications, and I want to make sure that continues if that is the case.
Will do.
Thank you. Appreciate it, all three of you. Thanks for your testimony. Next three, please, Sue.
The next three, please come up. Leslie Goss, M. Lehman, Mari Bauer, and they will be followed by Merrill Richmond and Cheryl Beyer.
Very good. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. I'm Leslie Goss. I live at 11888 Southwest Bremen Avenue, which is also known as 11811 Southwest Riverside Drive, in unincorporated Multnomah County between Selwood Bridge and Lake Oswego. I act as a facilitator, for lack of a better term, for the Riverdale Neighborhood Association, using various electronic bulletin boards and social media platforms to share all kinds of information with neighbors and arrange community meetings as needed. In mid-January, Andrew Abbey of PBOT and Don Russ of Portland Fire and Rescue reached out to the Riverdale grade school principal and our neighborhood association to provide a brief overview on the readdressing project for Southwest Portland and the likely impacts to our schools and neighborhood. Riverdale Grade School and the Neighborhood Association agreed to host a meeting on March 22nd for residents to hear a presentation from Mr. Abbey and Deputy Chief Russ about the elimination of zero leading addresses, converting and re-signing to South from Southwest, and the potential for improved emergency dispatch. Mr. Abbey also offered to clean up quirky addresses for our neighborhood residents. For instance, my lot has two completely different addresses. So our neighborhood residents are well-educated, high-income, high-caliber individuals with rigorously constructed arguments for or against different issues, and this issue is no different. There's been chatter ranging from great enthusiasm to be part of Portland's historical development. You can like the sixth sextant plan on a Facebook page developed by one of my neighbors. And then we've also had outrage over the onerous inconvenience of an address change with no real benefit to our neighborhood. Most residents understand and agree that emergency response is handled without incident, primarily by Lake Oswego Fire and police departments. I've heard complaint that converting to South from Southwest will create an inconsistent mess on a neighborhood street running along the Clackamas-Multnomah County line. I've also heard the familiar refrain, "Hey, we're not Portland. Why are they doing this to us?" So I believe many of these comments that I've heard, comments and concerns, have been addressed in the exhibit to you prepared by Mr. Abbey and his colleagues for this agenda, item 574. I can't give you a neighborhood-wide thumbs up or thumbs down on this effort, but what I can do is join the choir here and commend the work and the approach of Mr. Abbey and Deputy Chief Russ. And also Paul Cohn, incidentally, has come to our neighborhood and helped us with some of our quirky addresses. They have been incredibly thorough and articulate throughout this plan. They've been generous with their time during presentations, through emails and phone calls. They've been very responsive to all of my neighbors' inquiries and have taken steps to clean up some of these tricky addresses in our neighborhood. So we are grateful for their service and their clear communications. Thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I wish you well with this decision. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you for summarizing input that you've heard from Riverdale folks. What is your new address going to be, and how do you feel about that one?
My new address is going to be Bremen, and I feel good about it because it's where my driveway comes and goes, so that will be convenient for people trying to find my house. I'm not particularly wedded to the W for Southwest or not, it's going to take a long time. My husband is aggrieved that he's going to have to sort out the addresses with, you know, all the people we do business with. But if it's going to mean reliable emergency response for my neighborhood, I can't stand in the way of that.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Mari Bauer. I live in a leading zero area, and if this goes through, I appreciate the idea of grants to businesses to help with the costs. You were asking about costs earlier. You know, there's stationary business cards, and the residents, they have to get a new driver's license, passport,
et cetera, et cetera. Also, I'm wondering, again, how it seems like Collinsview had a lot of ability to hear about all the ins and outs. I heard about it 5 weeks ago from a letter, and so I'm kind of, I feel like I'm a little bit in the dark. But on the, as far as this 5 to 7 year change, I was wondering too how we're going to have two addresses for this time, how that's going to work. I like the idea of having that much time for the businesses to transition, but I was just wondering, how do we have two addresses? And how does fire, police, and the post office deal with that? And will that be efficient, and will there be still a problem with them going to the right address?
Andrew, do you want to respond to that now or at the end of the testimony? Okay.
But I would like to
Commissioner Fritz.
Because you know, the same concerns were registered with this 39th Avenue change, and I think what we found was that either address is fine and gets through. And so for things like driver's license, other things, you wait until you have your next regularly scheduled change so you don't have to change it in the meantime. So I will have some questions for staff about specifically for the first responders. Are they going to be able to find both? My understanding is that there's nowhere that's going to be confused in the with the Southwest numbers. I'll get some more clarity on that, but it worked out okay in the previous case for the most part.
Thank you.
Thank you both. Appreciate it.
And then our last two, Merrill Richmond and Cheryl Meyer.
Very good. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. My name is Merrill Richmond. I am three times affected by this change. A street name, a sequencing change, and the south to southwest. I moved here about 6 years ago from a small town outside of in New York. And one of the things that I enjoyed about that town, there were only about 6,500 people in it, was there was a very strong sense of local control. And when I moved here to Portland, it was one of the concerns that I had. Are you going to feel like you're part of a very dispassionate city? So what I wanted to say today was thank you for being so concerned. The team has been referenced many times. Andrew and his team have been very active with their outreach. I first heard about this change in one of the local papers and then attended some of the meetings that were organized. And because we're affected a couple of times by this, I've had email exchanges with Andrew personally and have been very impressed with the amount of attention that he's given all that. In the spirit of that local involvement, there are 9 houses on Esquilin Circus that are going to be part of a street name change. We're losing our circus, and we're going to become what was proposed to be Esquilin Circus Avenue, which seemed nonsensical. A few of us got together, reached out to the office, put a little 9-person petition together saying, can you please not make Esquilin Circus Avenue a reality as part of this name change? And the informal conversations with Andrew and his team have been very positive. I think that might be part of your amendment. So I just wanted to thank you all for demonstrating how a big city can still be very responsive to local concerns. So thank you for that.
Thank you for coming.
Sir, I've been racking my brain trying to find a town just outside of New York with 6,500 people.
Yeah.
So
Pleasantville, New York.
Pleasantville, New York.
Yeah.
I grew up just not far from Pleasantville, New York. Small town.
There you go.
Yeah, very good. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here, and thanks for sharing that positive message.
Sure.
Commissioner Fritz.
It's a circus, not a circle.
Correct. It's circus.
Yeah.
I live in a zoo, but I live on a circus.
What defines a, distinguishes a circus from any other type of
Some of the historical experts may know Palatine, Aventine, and Esquilin were 3 of the 7 hills of Rome. So maybe Mr. NATO's grandson knows the story. But
bread and circus.
So you had just like Piccadilly Circus.
So is it just a very small segment?
Yeah, there's, I believe, 9 houses.
And there isn't anything further either way, so it's not one of those cases.
Palatine on one end and Comus on the other.
All right, so all the history buffs out there, they're going to be sending us emails within the minute, promise you.
Yeah,
within a minute,
that's the street sign you're going to want.
Yeah. There's a bunch I want, but I'm still negotiating with the transportation service.
I'm reading the amendments, and it does say that neither street is being renamed in these ordinances, so presumably there is going to be more discussion on that.
Oh, okay.
I would expect that they wanted to put an avenue because of the streets one way being streets and avenues being the other way.
Yeah, the notice from the city indicated that the term circus is not recognized by the Postal Service, so maybe it's part of a standardization. I don't...
Pretty sure it is in Piccadilly Circus.
All right, moving right along. Hi. Good afternoon. You get the last word on this.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. I've listened with great intent. This project has been thought through very carefully and soundly, and I agree with it. But there's been 2 points I've been listening very carefully for, and I'd like some clarification on. A couple of people have addressed cost, and as an individual and a former banker, the first thing that popped into my mind is, who's going to pay all the filing fees for these plot changes? Trust deeds and all of that, that doesn't happen automatically. Is the city going to put that in their budget, or is the individual going to have to pay for those?
Individual.
So you're asking the residents to pay for the new filing fees, because that's several hundred dollars. Okay, and then the next thing is, I've heard all of the discussion about the preceding 0 addresses. I do not have a 0 in front of my address, and I'm really curious as to why a number was pulled out of the air to change 7 to 65. I don't see a reason for that.
We'll add it to the list for staff when they come.
Okay. I've been in that house for 48 years. It's unique because it is one digit. And unless there's a valid reason to change the number, I would prefer to retain that 7. It, like I say, there's no preceding 0 on it. Unfortunately, the people around me have 0s, but we do not. And those are the 2 things that I wanted to address.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for your time.
Resident experts are looking at the maps as we speak.
And thank you.
Ma'am, in addition, are you going from being southwest to south?
No.
No.
No, everything would be the same. It's just that they would take my number away.
Okay.
And like I say, it's unique. It's historic. I, you know, have lived there for so many years. We understood the story as to why the 0, you know, the river changing. And that's one of the things that comes up in conversation every once in a while. It's not like a matter of life or death, but we would prefer to keep that number if possible.
Very good.
Thank you for your time.
Thanks for coming in.
I'm particularly partial to number 7.
Mayor Wheeler, before I start to respond to questions, I just wanted to put a call out. Margaret Lehman had indicated that she was going to testify today, and she wasn't on the sign-up sheet. Just wanted to see if she was here and wanted to testify.
Oh, I did call for her.
Okay. All right. So a couple of things. Paul, did you want to come up as well? You're the expert on this. So I think the important thing to know is I have met with U.S. Postal Service. I want to clarify one thing. There's a 5-year dual signage. There is technically not a 5-year dual addressing. So in May of 2020, your address changes. That said, per my meeting with the U.S. Postal Service, the guillotine does not drop the day after we put up the new street signs, that they will continue to deliver mail to the old address. What we have is a 5-year dual street signage system. And, Mr., you look like you want to ask me a question, but I can also have Paul chime in.
Well, I do. I remember that we got a memo from the postmaster on Chavez.
Right.
That was for longer than whatever the minimum period is. Is it possible to get a longer a memorandum of understanding from them to allow for a little bit longer?
I think I can let Paul address this. The quick answer I would give to preview what Paul's probably going to say is we maintain an alias address record. And Paul, you want to take over and
sure.
answer the commissioner's question?
So just speaking to the post office, when we did meet with them, they did indicate that, I believe it's technically 6 months that they maintain that forward, but it would be, it would probably be recognized much longer than that, unofficially. I mean, some of these things depend on who the postal carrier, who's the person who's bringing the mail to your door.
Right.
You know, is it the same person who's on the regular route? Is it someone they're bringing in from someplace else who maybe doesn't know the area? So I think they don't want to, post office didn't want to go on record on guaranteeing it longer than 6 months. In regards to what Andrew was referring to with the old versus new addresses for systems at like BOEC, what we would do in that case, I feel like this microphone is
too close.
Am I too close? Okay. What we do in that case is we would maintain. There's two ways that addresses get found. They get found by address ranges on streets, but they also get found by individual address points. So we've already started. Since I maintain the data, I've already started going in and creating new segments for the South Portland address with addresses with the new ranges, and then the next step would be. And we've created new address points as well. So then going forward, we would have old and new address points overlapping each other on the map. And so if the old address comes in or the new address comes in because some vendor hasn't, a telephone vendor, for example, a cell phone company hasn't got their data updated yet, then we would make that happen. In regards to Circus, I did try and get the post office several years ago to recognize that as an approved street suffix and went all the way to Washington, D.C. and back, and they said no. So
I have an update on Circus. It's a British term, and it is either a large roundabout, a circular arrangement of houses, or an open circle square or plaza where several streets converge.
Yep. And one of the problems with Circus is people might tend to abbreviate it by saying CRC. CIRC, which could be confused with circle. So because we often do the street types with four letter. There's only four fields, four letters in that street type field. So it gets confusing.
So you took out Fairview Circus and Luray Circus, but you still got in here the other Esquiline, Aventine circuses.
Yeah, so Commissioner, the idea was is that Circus is not recognized by the Postal Service. If we were changing two out of the four circuses from southwest to south, didn't want to make these people change their addresses down the line. And Postal Service keep their little tickler of all the addresses that bug them. Oregon, Washington, Idaho, they have this little tickler file and they come talk to us about stuff they want us to change. So this way we're not having to rehash this conversation moving
forward.
But
they can have Circus Space Avenue.
Yes. Yes.
Sounds like
and
the best.
I wanted to respond to the very good question from the Collins Street resident. We decided to do that boundary change in Collins View. We were really trying to get rid of those imaginary boundary lines, and by moving the boundary from mid-block, which is a very confusing place to have addressing boundary change mid-block. You're driving down a block, and the numbers get smaller, and then all of a sudden they start to get larger. We made that conscious decision to have the boundary change at Viewpoint Terrace, and as a result of that, we had a cluster of houses just immediately to the west of Viewpoint Terrace that we had to change. A few of them are southwest today. They'll remain southwest, but we had to change them in order to maintain the proper sequencing. So the way Deputy Chief Don Russ explained it to me, if you're driving a fire truck down the street at 3 in the morning, it's dark, it's foggy, you're looking at the house numbers going down the street, you don't want them to be out of sequence, you want them to be all in order. And I would also add we're doing a fairly major renumbering on Southwest Military Road because it jumps from 5-digit numbers to 4-digit numbers, and as you're driving down the street, all the even numbers are on one side, and then all of a sudden it switches to the other side of the street, which is a violation of the cardinal rule of emergency response, is that odd numbers are always on one side of the street, and even is always on the other. So we're just trying to clean up all these, what I called earlier, the Bermuda Triangle difficulties of actually finding your way to addresses in this area.
Andrew, can I make a suggestion? We've had a lot of people express some heartburn about changing addresses, and I think I could write a book about changing addresses. I lived on what used to be called 39th, and it became Cesar Chavez Boulevard. And then I've had a couple of changes in the last 2 years. And the truth is that I'm actually more typical of the typical person in Portland now through all those moves than the other, because people are moving all the time, and they're moving often because they can't afford where they're renting or other changed circumstances. The good news is that some of our systems are getting better to address that. So, for example, I learned not long ago that when you contact DMV to update your address on your license, they automatically notify Multnomah County elections, so your address for your voting is updated. I think that must be some legacy of motor voter. But that's positive. And then I got a sticker in the mail that I put on my license. That was hardly an inconvenience, but I, you know, that was that killed two birds with one stone. I have found in each of my moves that the people that billing me for services were very resourceful about finding my new address. And so I'm heartened to know that they are highly motivated to get it right, and with or without my assistance. I don't run a business, and my wife doesn't run a business out of her home. I will say that one cost, but it's not necessarily a cost to everybody, is getting new checks. I know that a lot of banks offer the least expensive checks are free, but I, you know, mine have a little trim, so I might have paid $12 for that. But that was not that complicated. Of course, I had to update the addresses of organizations that I contribute to or that my kids interact with. Yeah, that took some time. But the point I want to make is the systems we deal with are getting better to help us do this because people are moving more frequently. And I also found the post office to be incredibly helpful. And the post office, people look at the name on the package or the letter and the address. And frankly, the entire time, 20-something years I lived on what's now Cesar Chavez between Knott and Stanton, I don't remember the time a neighbor ever came to my house saying, here's a letter addressed to you that came to our house. So that's of some comfort. But I think it may be worth our consideration providing to the neighborhood associations or on the website just a little cheat sheet on tips that we get from the post office, maybe from an accountant and people that do a lot of this, on how to update your address in a way that's as easy as possible. Because it is a burden. It comes on top of everything else we do in our life. But perhaps we could offer some helpful hints.
Thank you, Commissioner. We'll be pleased to know we actually were already planning to do that. Elise DeLisser from Collinview, who testified, had suggested that very thing. And so if council approves this ordinance on June 6th, what we're planning to do within the next month is to send out a confirmation letter to everybody and include exactly that, which is a cheat sheet in terms of what to do to change the address. And I've already started talking to, example, Portland General Electric, Northwest Natural, Multnomah Athletic Club, Oregon DMV. I've already started those conversations to make them aware that this is afoot.
You're one step ahead, as always. Thank you.
Thank you.
So what's about the issue that Ms. Meyer raised about her house number 7? There are some places in Portland, Mountain Park comes to mind, where the houses are just named numerically starting from 1. And presumably first responders find their way there. Why are we, just because it's more logical, saying, well, they have to be on opposite sides of the street and they have to have the cross street as part of the address?
I think, Commissioner, part of the feedback that I heard from neighborhood residents, this isn't just a bureaucratic thing, it's just, I'll give you a good example. When I was talking to Lewis and Clark, their president's house was numbered out of sequence. And so they would consistently have guests arrive who were looking at the house numbers driving down the street. And the president's house at Lewis and Clark is currently addressed as if it's 2 houses away. So in theory, yes, we could honor that request of the president of Lewis and Clark to keep the old number. He's warmly embracing the new number because he's tired of people getting lost finding his house. So I would throw out a cautionary note of being careful what you wish for, because if we keep the old number and change everybody else, then it's going to lead to wayfinding problems down the line. I would also note that the ordinance allows the Bureau of Development Services the administrative authority to change any addresses after you adopt this ordinance. So we will continue that outreach process if there's a good reason to change it to something different. Basically, what will happen is after council adopts this ordinance, it reverts back to the administrative procedure of BDS assigning the address, and they will have the full capability of doing that.
And have you notified everybody whose number will change?
Absolutely, yes. And I heard very little feedback from the folks that were notified.
Thank you.
And one of the feedback I did hear, by the way, is we're not wedded to the Esquiline Circus Avenue, and we should really change it to Esquiline Avenue, and that was part of the amendment that you just approved earlier. So we've made a lot of changes based on feedback that we've heard from property owners.
Oh, wait a minute. So you're saying that they are going to be just Avenue, not Circus Avenue?
Correct.
And is that based on all the residents?
Is that based on what?
All of the residents who have a circle.
Oh, I'm reluctant to say all, but I certainly, there's only like 9 people living on the street, and I'm pretty sure I talked to 5 of them, so I'm pretty sure we have a plurality at that point.
Yeah, there's the signatures for 7 of the 9.
To change it just to Avenue, not Circus
yeah.
Avenue.
Correct.
Okay, because honestly, if there's just 9, then you really could have just a group vote, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much.
It's nice to have a petition in favor of something I'm proposing rather than against it. So.
Yeah, really. Well done.
Can I just acknowledge also Jeanette Sillick and Lisa Baumgartner from BDS, who are the addressing team back there, who worked a lot with myself and Andrew and had some hair pulling and probably still will have some, but I appreciate their work as well on this. So.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much, and thank you.
And Lisa Baumgartner was indispensable in assigning all these new addresses, so I want to get that on the record. So.
Great. All right, colleagues, anything else on this before we pass it on? Very good. With regard to item 574, this is a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. With regard to item 575, this is also a first reading of a non-emergency ordinance. It moves to second reading. Thank you, everyone. Thank you. Next item, and it's time certain, it is after 3:30. Could you call item 576, please, Sue?
Item 576, authorize a 5-year price agreement with Wells Fargo Bank N.A. for banking services for a not-to-exceed amount of $675,000.
Very good. This is a procurement report. We have Chief Financial Officer Jennifer Cooperman hiding over in the corner, and there's Larry.
Sorry, sir. We weren't hiding. We were waiting for traffic to clear.
Yeah, no, I could see that. You were being patient. Thank you. And Jennifer, are you starting us off today?
Actually, I'm going to let Larry Platt
Very
start
good.
Us off.
Thank you.
Are we ready? Good afternoon. I am Larry Platt, procurement manager with Procurement Services. Thank you for having us here, Mr. Mayor, Commissioners. This is a report relative to banking services from the Office of Management and Finance Treasury Division for Banking Services. Portland City Council passed Ordinance 188615 on September 27, 2017, authorizing competitive solicitation for banking services. These are services such as receiving deposits, providing checking accounts, and housing our electronic payment system for vendors and employees. Essentially, these are the same services that you and most citizens have in place with a bank or credit union. Because we're a public institution, we're required to use a depository bank, which meets the State of Oregon minimum standards and is approved by the Oregon State Treasurer's Public Funds Collateralization Program. This limits the field, if you will, of potential proposers to a very few large banks. On October 3rd, 2017, Procurement Services advertised RFP 748 for banking services. 5 proposals were received and opened on October 30th, 2017. All proposals were responsive to the solicitation requirements. All proposers were evaluated by a team of diverse and qualified evaluators, including a member from the city's Minority Evaluator Program. The city issued a notice of intent to negotiate an award to Wells Fargo on December 11, 2017. No protests were received. The evaluation process was a 2-step process, which included an evaluation of the written responses, as well as a series of in-person interviews. The city used information gathered in the written responses to craft questions for the oral interviews. Wells Fargo scored the highest in the overall evaluation process. As a side note, the fact that Wells Fargo was a current and incumbent vendor did not merit any points in the evaluation process. Wells Fargo has a current City of Portland business tax registration number. They are compliant with all of the city's contracting requirements. OMF Treasury's level of confidence in the cost of the services is high, as the city has over 20 years of historical data by which to determine appropriate costs. Awarding this price agreement to Wells Fargo will allow the city to continue the banking services we currently provide and to continue with the excellent customer service we are known for. It is requested that the City Council approve this report and authorize the Chief Procurement Officer to execute a contract with Wells Fargo for banking services in amount not to exceed $675,000. If the Council has any questions concerning the solicitation or the resulting agreement, I can answer those. Or if there are questions specific to the actual services required or the services or how they work, Jennifer Cooperman, the City's new Chief Financial Officer and Director of Revenue and Financial Services, is here to answer those.
Mayor. Are you? Commissioner Fish, then Commissioner Udaly, then Commissioner Saltzman.
Thank you very much. I've received a number of emails and phone calls with some questions. I think it's just helpful in this forum to pose the questions and ask either you, Larry, or the Chief Financial Officer to respond to them. The first was consideration given to contracting with a credit union versus a bank like Wells Fargo?
Credit unions were free to respond to the RFP. We received none. I will just explain that the banking services that we are procuring are pretty vast, and we received five proposals from banks that are recognized as national corporate commercial type banks, and the volume of services that we require from our financial institution might not be the ones that a credit union or a smaller local bank is in the position to be able to deliver.
Thank you. I think it would be helpful if you just distinguish for us the difference as you understand it between Wells Fargo's commercial banking operation and its personal banking operation.
So Wells Fargo, like many very large banks, runs separate lines of businesses. And we, as the City of Portland, are serviced by the commercial side or the corporate side of the bank. In addition to that, the bank runs what it calls a personal services part of their institution, and that is the side of the bank that if you walked in to a branch and wanted to open up a checking account or a savings account, or even if you were a small business, you might be serviced by that more retail side of the house. It is a different part of the organization than what the City of Portland is serviced by, since the types of services that we use as a corporation, as a public entity, are very different from what you might use as a checking account holder or a savings account holder. We use services that are designed for businesses, automated clearinghouse payments, positive pay, anti-fraud measures, we have 20-odd different bank accounts, and we move money between those accounts on a daily basis. So the type of service that we are contracting for is very different than what might be sold or would be sold on the personal banking or the retail side of the institution.
So we're on the commercial side of that ledger?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
And I guess my last question, at least in this round, because I'd very much like to hear from my colleagues, is you can barely turn on the TV these days without seeing ads from Wells Fargo and from Uber essentially making the case that they have made significant mistakes in the past and asking consumers to give them a second, third, fourth chance, whatever. Ms. Cooperman, that any decision we make with respect to this contract will be evaluated both on the substance, did we run a clean process on procurement, and from the materials that I've reviewed, it was a clean process, no protests, so that answers one side of the ledger. But there's also going to be those who look at the symbolism, not the substance of the decision, but the symbolism of continuing a relationship with a company that has sometimes been in the headlines for the wrong reasons. you're charged with making sure that we remain creditworthy, that we have integrity in our financial decisions, and that we make wise decisions. Based on everything you know about Wells Fargo, why are you recommending that we enter into this contract?
I'm recommending that we enter into this contract with Wells Fargo because Wells Fargo does great work on behalf of the city. We have banked with Wells Fargo, as you said, for over 20 years. It probably is more. We periodically go out for competitive procurements to reevaluate the market, both from a service standpoint and a pricing standpoint. And Wells Fargo continues to do well by the city. The issues that they have been headlined for are ones that we have not experienced on our side of the bank. I can't point to something that we have had an issue with on the corporate side. And if we have, the bank has always been quick to discuss it with us, diagnose it, and remediate it. But there isn't anything that rises to the level in our experience like what is going on the retail side of the bank. If I could take a minute, I'd like to briefly walk through what we did in the RFP process. We award 100 points in our RFP process, and 20 of those points are on the corporate responsibility section of the proposer's proposal to us. 40% is based on the services and approach, because at the base level, we want to make sure that whoever we are contracting with can do the services that we need for them to do. 25% of the awarded points are on pricing. 15% are based on references and financial strength. And then there's the 20 points on corporate responsibility. And when we had we received 5 proposals. We invited 3 institutions to come in and make oral presentations to us. And we again focused on corporate responsibility when we talked to the vendors at that point. We had on our evaluation committee representatives from Meyer Memorial Trust, from Mercy Corps. We had a member of the Minority Evaluation Program. We had accounting staff and treasury staff. And it was a consensus selection of Wells Fargo to keep as our depository banking partner.
Thank you.
Commissioner Daly.
So I've already gone on record in the past saying that it's my strong preference that we don't do business with Wells Fargo. It's my understanding, unfortunately, that the other 4 applicants or respondents to the RFP have some of the same problematic issues for me as Wells Fargo. I understand that the corporate division is separate from the consumer division, but that's not much of a consolation for me. Neither is the fact that they've revised their ethical standards. They're actually under investigation again for their practices in their wealth management division. But my biggest issue is where they invest their money. That being said, I would like you to share with the public who the other applicants were, and I don't expect you to say this, so I'll just say it. Unfortunately, there is no more attractive alternative than Wells Fargo, because they're all conducting business in the same way.
So as Larry Palat mentioned, the banks that are eligible to bid are banks that participate in the state treasurer's qualified public depository program. So the 5 proposals that we received were from Wells Fargo, JP Morgan Chase, U.S. Bank, KeyBank, and MUFG Union Bank.
Oh, I'm not familiar with MUFG Union Bank.
MUFG, Mitsubishi, I forget what the UFG part stands for, but it was Union Bank was a standalone U.S. bank. They actually have an office downtown and was purchased, so they have different ownership today.
And then my second and final question is whether we're able to do business on a smaller scale with any local credit unions or community banks.
We do business with smaller institutions. We do business with credit unions. The public qualified depository program was expanded in 2012 to allow credit unions to participate. Prior to that, the law was not written to allow them, and it was actually under then State Treasurer Wheeler's guidance that the state law was changed. We do business with those smaller institutions on the depository side, and we have deposits for, I think it's up to 15 institutions right now that includes some of all of the smaller banks and the credit unions who are interested in having deposits. Not many of them are because they're required to put up collateral to do that, and there is a cost for doing that. And it isn't necessarily the most attractive deposit for them to hold our money, but we do regularly inquire as to their interest in doing that. And I'll just add that if there are, when there have been institutions that have expressed interest in doing business with the city, in some cases what we have found is that they either don't have the full suite of services that we need, or if they are presenting those services, it's because there's actually one of these banks behind the scenes who is selling it on a generic basis, allowing the smaller bank to put their name on it. And so we're paying for the same service from the same institution, but at a higher price because there's always a spread.
Right. I did actually think of one more question.
Sure.
Could you explain again, just for the benefit of people in the room and people watching at home, we are restricted by certain laws and rules. We can't just bank with anyone. So could you maybe, in a nutshell, explain why so many institutions would be excluded out of the gate from responding to that RFP?
So it goes back to the Oregon Revised Statutes, yeah. And it's ORS 295 that we are subject to that tells us as a jurisdiction in the state of Oregon who we can bank with. We can keep up to the FDIC NCUA insured limit in any institution that has a branch in Oregon. If we want to go above that federal insurance limit, then we can only bank with institutions. I keep looking at the mayor, and I shouldn't do that, but we can only bank with institutions that the state treasurer has approved for us to bank with. And again, it's those institutions who say that they want to participate in the collateralization program.
And that's really, I mean, that's our fiduciary responsibility. We can't risk public dollars.
So. And it's actually personal liability on the treasurer's standpoint.
Well, congratulations.
If we don't do that. So I've been very keen over my 6 years as treasurer to make sure that we are following the ORS, because if we don't, I don't want to be personally responsible for that.
And what is the FDIC limit now?
$250,000,
which
right.
isn't much.
For
our purposes.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Right.
Very good. Commissioner Saltzman.
So I'm really torn on this. I've banked personally at Wells Fargo or its predecessors, First National, First Interstate. The tellers are always remarking, well, you've had an account here for 30 plus years. And I've always liked, I think you helped distinguish this for me by talking about the commercial side of the bank and the private side of the bank. Well, I've always liked the private side of the bank. I see a rainbow of employees when I walk in there. I see them very present in our community at Pride Parade, things like that. Wells Fargo is outstanding. But I would ask you the same question. If they had perpetrated most of the abuses that they are being called to account for are things that happen to individuals. So I'm assuming that's the private side of the banking.
Yes.
Now, if they had done the same thing to us, pressured us into opening accounts we probably didn't need, purchasing insurance mm-hmm. we didn't need, mm-hmm. I can't remember what the others were, but things like that, mm-hmm. would you be singing the same tune?
I'd be the first person to come to you and say, we're not getting the service that we are paying for, and that as a fiduciary, I have a responsibility to look out for the interests of the city and therefore go out to re-procure those services. I'm not seeing that. If I had been seeing that, I would be the first to tell you.
And I guess my dilemma is, can we afford to put blinders on? I mean, do we not have to also recognize the fact that the private side of the banking where these abuses took place probably took place because these were small people compared to the City of Portland account? You know, these are businesses, people like myself, you know, small fry, who it's easier to have these things perpetrated on and get away with it. And that's what I'm wrestling with. And isn't our job now as, you know, on the bigger side of the ledger to stick up for the little people who have been abused? And, you know, like I said, I have mixed feelings, but I do think we are at a point where, you know, punishment may be in order. And this is a small contract, $600,000 over 6 years. But still, where do we come down on this?
Several thoughts going through my mind with that. It's a small contract because one is that the bank offered to reduce its pricing for us in this contract than what we've been paying for. We are very judicious in the way we use our balances to earn credits, which is what we use to pay for a lot of our actual services. So the hard dollars that we spend don't happen that often for us to pay for our banking services. That's a way of providing services on the corporate and commercial side of the house that's not eligible for the individual side of the house. So it may look like a small contract in dollars, but it's actually fairly well ingrained in the city's operations. If we were to move our banking relationship, we would incur a six-figure cost to do that, and that would be hard dollar cost, time cost, and it would be a big risk for the city. Now, that's not to say that we wouldn't do it for the right reason, but if we are going to do it, I want it to be for the right reason.
So we have a corporate responsibility criteria in there.
Yes.
For 20 percentage points.
Yes.
And both U.S. Bank and J.P. Morgan Chase did better than Wells Fargo on the corporate responsibility. So why shouldn't we reward one of those institutions that did a better job, even though it's only 20% of the criteria? I think we're, if you're in my mind, it's like, okay, we need to speak up for the other side of the operation, people who have been abused on the other side of the operation, the little people. Mm-hmm. We have an obligation. We can't just draw the line at, sorry, the corporate side's treated us great. You know, like I said, I have very positive personal feelings towards Wells Fargo, but I'm also feeling the offenses committed towards so many people is so outrageous that we ought to take a stand. And given the fact that they did not do as well on corporate responsibility as the other two contending institutions did, why wouldn't we go with one of them?
With the scores in front of me, it looks like they did do fairly well on the corporate responsibility side. They were evaluated by the committee. They were not evaluated on paper as high as their competitors were. They did a much better job when they came in on their oral presentation regarding corporate responsibility than their competitors did. So perhaps it was the way they wrote the proposal as opposed to the way they came in person. The first responsibility I have wearing my city treasurer hat is to ensure that we are contracting with a vendor who can perform the services that we need for the city. I recognize that they have not done as well on the individual side, and I think we are highlighting that, and many of the cities who are wrestling with this very same question are highlighting that. The media is highlighting that. So they're not getting away scot-free, and they've been through an evaluation process and come out the other end as the top vendor.
If I could just add one thing.
I mean, I've looked at the criteria, and it looks like, I mean, all the point spreads are relatively close. It's all, you know, how big is big in terms of a difference.
Yeah.
But I saw 101 points in corporate responsibility for the other two and 93 for Wells Fargo. Now, again, that's not that big of a gap, but considering the whole point spread was probably less than, you know, 30 points between three institutions.
Relative to the corporate responsibility on the first round in the written proposals, that was a question that came forward from the evaluation team, was Wells Fargo's proposal seemed a tad bit vague on their corporate responsibility aspect. So utilizing that in the second round, the committee specifically built a question tied to directly to their answer, which gave them an opportunity to really expand on what they had brought to the table on the front end. So, yeah, maybe not quite as clean on the front, but when you when the committee got specific and said, okay, tell me about this, they did very well. So in the second round, they did score higher than all others on the corporate responsibility section, but there again, because it was a specific question, tell me about, and they did well.
So just legally, what are our options here? Do we either accept this or reject it, or can we pick one of the other finishers?
In the current climate, as my understanding of the legislative capacity, you if you accept the report, you direct the chief procurement officer to initiate or execute the contract. If you reject the report, you would end up saying, go do it again. So,
but we can't amend the report, basically.
No, there's okay. Not a legislative capacity to amend the report that I'm aware of.
Okay.
That
sounds
much better.
Legal counsel is
yes.
Nodding.
Yeah, they're sitting right there. So
that would be unprecedented.
Very good. I'm sorry, Dan, are you done?
Yeah, I'm done.
Very good. Commissioner Fish.
When I moved here over 20 years ago and had a chance to learn more about Portland from some people that had lived here and had deeper roots, one of the things I learned is that it was not that long ago that we had banks that were headquartered in Portland that had presidents and CEOs headquartered in Portland. And over time, that changed. We became less a headquarter city, and we became more a branch office city. And this is, I guess, a philosophical question for you, Jennifer, but it may be relevant to my thinking. Is there a difference between whether Wells Fargo was headquartered here, was a national bank, and the practices were emanating from them as the nationally headquartered bank in our backyard versus the situation that we're presented with, which is essentially a branch office of a national company that we've had a longstanding relationship with?
So it's very easy when your banker is two blocks away to visit and talk about issues or problems or ask questions. There aren't many services that we, at least in Treasury, are using today where the vendor is two blocks away. Until 2 years ago, our Wells Fargo relationship manager was in Portland, and then he retired, and we were moved to a relationship manager individual out of Seattle. He is down here frequently. He always answers the phone. It's really immaterial to me that he is physically here versus being in Seattle. Does that answer your question?
Sort of, but let me shift to another question.
Okay.
Because what I hear, Commissioner Saltzman, part of the concern that I hear him expressing is that it's bad enough what we've learned about what the company has, in essence, admitted to. But this is a six-year contract?
Five-year.
But we're now potentially entering into a five-year agreement, and we don't know whether there's been a fundamental change in culture. There could be other episodes that cause us to reconsider. So two questions on that front. One is, do we have an ironclad exit clause in the agreement? Should there be some event that comes to our attention that causes mm-hmm. us to reconsider our relationship?
Yes, I'll take that part. Yes, the city has a cancellation for convenience clause.
So convenience. So that means almost at our discretion.
Well, it means exactly at our discretion. We would be able to, for any reason, at any time, terminate on a 30-day notice the contract.
And just as in terms of sort of our thinking about this, Ms. Cooperman, can you assure us that were there to be, in the future, were there to be new information or new circumstances that cause you to have any concerns about the relationship that we have with Wells Fargo, you would bring that to our attention immediately so the council could decide whether to exercise that clause?
Absolutely.
And I guess the final question, and it's just in fairness, someone gave me a copy of an online editorial that the Oregonian ran, and one of the paragraphs begins with the statement, but Wells Fargo's, quote, misleading answer on its application to a question on corporate responsibility, blah, blah, blah. I didn't check the hyperlinks, and I didn't see anything in the editorial that referred to that, but since that certainly goes to the question of the integrity of the application, what do you know what the Oregonian editorial board is referring to in terms of an alleged misleading answer on Wells Fargo's application?
Yes. In our section of the RFP regarding qualifications, we asked a question. We asked the proposer to disclose whether in the last 5 years that the entity or any key personnel had been the subject of any regulatory action or significant civil or criminal actions related to the services described in this RFP. And the bank's response was to give us a link to their